Hello, and welcome to the Further Podcast, where we explore the far reaches of the human experience, from missions to Mars, to skydiving, to blowing one's mind with psychoactive substances. These conversations offer insight into how these extreme experiences showcase the human spirit, and just might teach us how to live our everyday lives a bit better. I'm your host, Haley Maria Duran, and I study the effects of psychedelics and other out-there experiences on people's minds and brains. So, there are definitely some unique occupational hazards, I guess you could say, to being a psychedelic facilitator. One that you might not hear so much about happening is getting stabbed while extracting astral parasites or demons from a client. But according to Julio Riviera, this actually happened to him in what he describes as a parasite extraction facilitated by ayahuasca gone wrong. In this episode, we also discuss a bit more about Julio's unique modality working with psilocybin and ayahuasca to extract what he describes as demons, including the use of ceremonial daggers and extremely high doses of psilocybin. I also want to be clear about why Further is sharing stories like this. It's not that people need to go seek out demon extraction necessarily or, you know, work with ceremonial daggers. I am just merely trying to capture some of the frameworks that exist out there in the wild, so to say, for using psychedelics, because there's quite a bit going on in the underground and sort of retreat communities. And I think it's important to catalog these different belief structures and systems of use that just sort of emerge, just so I guess people know what's out there. So a few small warnings. This episode is quite descriptive of what happened to Julio when he was stabbed by a client for the first 20 minutes or so. So if you don't want to hear a very detailed description of what happened, I would recommend skipping that part. And lastly, the dosing parameters that Julio describes working with are quite extreme. After the episode, I clarified with Julio that he does tend to use more potent strands of psilocybin containing mushrooms such as penis envy. And, you know, while mushrooms vary substantially in potency, this is likely what he describes using is between maybe 150 milligrams to 200 milligrams of psilocybin. That is about 8 times the dose used in a lot of the clinical trials where it's often 25 milligrams. Likewise, the legal limit for purchasing psilocybin containing products in a package in Oregon is 25 milligrams. So he is describing using quite a high amount, also doing this for 4 consecutive days. So that's roughly the equivalent to the amount of psilocybin used in 32 psilocybin sessions within a lot of the clinical trials. So that is quite a high amount. Julio points out, you know, nobody has ever died of psilocybin. It's not physically risky, according to him, but, you know, the dosage makes the poison, as they say, and, you know, the more you take of something, the more potential issues there might be, and those might be psychological issues. So, yeah, just be very aware that what he is describing is very different than the sort of dosages that are often used. Yeah. I don't want anybody to hear this and be like, ah, all right, I'll try my own DIY demon extraction with 4 consecutive doses of 10 grams of mushrooms. And here is Julio telling his story. All right, so today I am here with Julio Riviera, and he has been involved with facilitating psychedelic-assisted journeys for quite some time. He's been involved with an ayahuasca church. But recently he experienced an incident, I suppose you could call it, that is quite strange, and I think it's really important for people to kind of consider that these sorts of things can happen with psychedelics very rarely. So maybe you could tell us a bit about what happened.
The incident. Okay. Well, thank you for having me. Good. Well, before that, I would like to say that I've been facilitating psychedelics for over 27 years. I was initiated in 1998 in ayahuasca by my teacher shaman, Don Jose Campos, from the Peruvian Amazon. And then that journey took me all the way to today. That's where I've been facilitating. And the last 2-3 years, I've been expanding my journey of facilitating psychedelics with mushrooms. And I also experienced the Bufor Varius, the 5-OH-DMT experiences, never facilitating, but having the experience a few times. So I have a good idea of the psychedelic experience and the subjective experience of the psychedelics. So I've been facilitating ayahuasca for over 15 years. That have been my main line. And recently, I was asked by a friend of mine to do a 3-day retreat, private, one-on-one, 3-day retreat with ayahuasca. A little bit of background about that is important. What happens is that this is a friend of mine that have been a member of the church that I have been working with since its foundation in 2016. Recently exit my work in that church. It was a Brazilian church, a Brazilian ayahuasca church. I was co-founder of that church, and I ended my work there last year. So, but during that time, I met this guy that for 8 years have taken ayahuasca around 70 times, many times, including about 20 with me personally as facilitator. We have several facilitators in the church. We used to have when I used to belong to the church. And this subject of the astral parasites, this subject about some negative energy bothering my subconscious mind has been a theme in our conversations with this friend. And he has been working with ayahuasca, hoping to get rid of this thing that at one point in our conversations, he was describing it as a parasite. And it got my attention because I've been digging into that concept for some time. In fact, I gave him a book about biological parasites. And it was very interesting, our conversation that derived from there. I mean, it's incredible when you look at the biological parasites that, for example, there's one that invade the brains of the ants. And when this parasite wants to reproduce or spread around, it takes over the nervous system of the ant, burst the head of the ant with these parasites, and makes the ant climb a tall plant in the neighborhood of the colony. And its head blows up, spreading the parasites in the neighborhood for reproduction. So these parasites have the capacity to influence the behavior of the ant, not only multiplying inside of it, but also making the ant climb this plant to blow up and spread around the parasites. There's another one that works with the mice, with the mouse, that makes the mouse go and feel attracted to the pee of the cats, which is an enemy. So it makes the rats go to the cats, and the cats eat that rat and then gets infected by this parasite, and then it spreads the parasite with the cat's feces. So it's interesting how parasites make behavior change in their hosts. And like that ones, there's several others that are very, very intriguing, how parasites modify the host's behavior. So in these conversations with our, applying this metaphysical principle as above, so below, or vice versa, there must be astral parasites that influence the human behavior, similarly with the animal biological parasites. So yes, so we were making this paradigm of reality about parasites in the human brain, in the astral or in the quantum field, or whatever you want to call it, where the mind works. So that was our conversation. That was the background of our conversation. So when I left the church, I got involved into this mushroom paradigm, no, sorry, paradigm, a protocol, which is something that we start practicing in Jamaica because it's fully legal in Jamaica, where this program that we initiated, I'm the program director of that of that project is about ingesting heroic doses of psilocybin to disable the ego for momentarily and let the darkest, lowest parts of the subconscious up to the surface. And then we deal with parasites. Then we deal with the extraction, the physical extraction of astral parasites, because they all have a physical correspondence in the human body, in different organs. But that's a subject we can cover later. The point is that when I initiated the project, I called my friend and say, listen, I am into this project now. It's about extracting parasites. You may be interested. And he said, of course, sign me up. I am very interested. But first, let's do a 3-day retreat with ayahuasca, which is the medicine that I know, in preparation to Jamaica with the mushrooms. He said, of course, okay, no problem. So back in October of last year, it was relatively recent, we coordinated a private 3-day retreat with 3 ceremonies of ayahuasca for my friend. So the retreat ran very well. The idea of this private retreat is to do intense coaching about what happens in the session, the day after the session, and then do a good preparation for the next session. And the coaching session between the second and the third sessions was excellent. It was 1.5 hours, very powerful. I made, with my coaching, make my friend understand that this how the operating procedure of this parasite, how this parasite was fooling him into believing certain things. And he got it. And he started crying. Yes, you're right. And he got ready for ceremony number 3. After ceremony of number 3 was completed, this is the story that I want to tell you. It was incredible. It was a psychotic event in medical terms. In esoteric terms, it's a demonic possession in the clearest descriptions. So what happened was at the end of the session, the last things that I heard from my friend say coherently was, Julio, this is incredible. I don't know how I'm going to integrate this. I need to talk. And I say, well, the rules are that we talk after you have done sleep and we have breakfast, and then we integrate the session, not during. So I told him to come back to his bed and continue, finish his processing. It was already 4 hours. So it was finishing. But suddenly he was possessed, I think, by this energy that he just extracted or removed from his psyche. But this thing wandered around his psyche somehow and start speaking through him. And his voice changed, very grave voice like that, and start saying, I lost the battle. I lost the battle. I lost the battle. So it was like the demon saying, I was extracted, I was removed, this guy got rid of me. That was my understanding. I was very happy with what I heard. Hey, he did it. I'm very happy. He removed the stuff and he's going to be very happy now. But I was wrong. It continued. The possession became stronger. My friend was not there at all. He remembers everything, however, but he was unable to connect with his motor system, with his body. He was separated and he was just watching as a standby observer while this energy took over his body. So the demon said, this is the word I'm going to be using, although you can use other words like, you know, parasites or others, negative energies. But the demon said, I'm leaving, but I'm taking you with me. So it's like, you're not going to be free. I'm taking your soul with me. You're going to die. I mean, he didn't say you're going to die, but you are with me now. I'm taking you with me. So the guy immediately started to, as soon as he said that, he grabbed the cap of the water bottle that he had, this aluminum bottle with an aluminum cap, and he tried to swallow the cap to commit suicide. He wanted to choke himself. And when I saw that, I was basically succeeding in doing it. I jump on top of him. I grab his throat, and with my other hand, I pull the cap out to save his life. I cannot allow a participant in my ceremony to die, commit suicide, because for sure I'm going to jail. So I was very scared about what he was doing. So immediately he started to fight me. He said, now I'm taking you with me too. So, okay. So I started holding his arms. Listen, hold on, relax, come back, you know. They mentioned the name of my friend, but he was not listening. So we start fighting. physical fight, attacking me, and I'm trying to control him. Not attacking him, but trying to submit him. But it was very strong. This guy can lift a car. It was very strong. And as this is true, what you hear about these moments where in psychotic events that these people become extremely strong. And that was the case. So we fought for 20 minutes. We destroyed the house, furniture. I mean, it was a big fight. I couldn't control the guy. And at some point, the only advantage that I have, you know, I'm 68. The guy was 32. But I have 50 pounds heavier than him. So I use my weight and put myself on top of him to control him. And I start choking him while I was saying, relax. I was attempting to make him pass out, like in martial arts, that people pass out but then come back. And I was attempting to do that, to have like 10 seconds, 15 seconds of advantage to run away, do something, get out of the house. I was exhausted. So when I was pressing him, I got this epiphany, this experience from the spirit world. This is the third time that happens to me in my life. The first time was in my teens. The second time was about 20 years ago in a carjacking, when I was gunpoint to be killed. The first time was 100 feet underwater when I was scuba diving, and it saved me from this scuba diving accident that would end my life. In the carjacking, it saved my life again. And this time came back and it recognized this feeling. It's like the Holy Spirit, my higher self, some kind of spiritual phenomena, to put it in scientific terms, that talked to me and said, don't kill him, don't kill him, don't kill him, three times. And at the same time said, it came together with this pack of telepathic information. I understood everything. It said, get out of this house because he's going to kill you inside the house. He's going to win. He said, he's going to win. He didn't say kill. He said, he's going to win inside the house. You have to get out of this house. And I assented, okay. So I released him. I thought about the phone that was nearby, my phone, and get it run out of the house. So I did that. I don't know where he went. When I ran for my phone, opened the door, which was locked, because it was a session there, opened the door to get out with my phone. And suddenly I look back and he's coming to me to attack me. It was very dark. It was 2 in the morning. I lost my eyeglasses in the fight, so I couldn't see clearly. I just thought that this guy was going to punch me again. But no, he had run to the kitchen and came out with his butcher knife and began stabbing me. And by the first 2 stabs in my chest, that's what I learned, that this guy was stabbing me. I didn't see anything. And that's when my adrenaline pumped up. And there was 10 seconds of horror. One over here, one big one over here. You know, he punctured my lung. And then I was able to, in one of them, I grabbed the knife, the blade, and I grabbed his wrist with my left hand, because I'm lefty, that's my strong hand, and pull him out. And he's forced like that, and my thumb was left hanging from my hand. Big, deep cut. I pulled him, the knife behind his head, pulled him down on the ground with my weight on top. I see all the blood of my wounds spreading all over him. And that's when I said, I can die here. This is what the Holy Spirit was saying. So, oh my God, help. And this spirit spoke through me in that panic state. I would have never come up with these words. And when as I pronounced them, I realized what I just said. I didn't come up with this word. It was from another realm. It was like another kind of possession from my spiritual guides or whatever, my higher self, my subconscious mind. You know how to label that. And I said, it's okay. Don't kill me. Don't kill me. I kill you. If you want to die, I kill you, and it's over. It's okay. Stop fighting about this. And you know what happened? He said, okay, great. And he gave me the knife to kill him. So I was surprised. I just obviously immediately grabbed the knife. And there he was, arm extended. He wanted to be like this Dracula stabbing the chest. And I said, okay, I'm going to kill you now. I was feeling weak, because I was losing a lot of blood. I'm going to kill you now. And when I went up to kill him, supposedly, I knew the message. I would not do that. So I immediately went to the floor, grabbed my phone, and ran out of the house with the knife. He got even more mad, went after me, catch up me, and we start fighting in the garden of the house. I was screaming, help, help. It was 2 in the morning. Nobody was hearing. Not all houses were. It was in the neighborhood. All houses were dark, people sleeping. And then I have the opportunity, I will grab him and I had a knife, I could have killed him there easily. But I knew in self-defense, I was already caught. But probably I could get away from that one once as self-defense in a court of law. But it was a spiritual thing. I'm not going to kill this guy. So I threw a knife. It fell in the bushes. So he didn't see where it fell. So I ran to the middle of the street. He went after me. And I continued running to the other side and start banging on a door of one of the neighbors. I remember the blood running down the door when I was kicking and banging on this door. He catched me. All this is in video because the door camera caught everything. So I grabbed this guy. I said, this is my last energy, so I'm going to spend retaining this guy under control until somebody comes for help, because my greatest fear was that he would run to the house and find another knife to kill me. So I grabbed for him for about 7-10 minutes, and the police came, and I was taken to the hospital. I was in intensive care, almost passed away. My blood pressure was 60 over 30. I lost a lot of blood. It was a very bloody scene, and very gory. It was a nightmare. And I survived that one. So for me, it was then the police came to interview me, and it's all in the police report, the demons. I mean, we have all the evidence that this happened, pictures, videos. It was all caught on video, and the police have all the evidence. Unfortunately, the guy is facing charges for attempted murder. And with my lawyers and his lawyers, I'm trying to do all I can to get those charges dropped, because I don't want my friend to rot in jail for 10, 15 years, whatever, for what happened. I know it was not him, and he doesn't deserve to go to jail for that. I forgive him because I know what happened. It was a demonic possession. He was successfully removing the demon. What we didn't count on was that the demon came back to possess him and revenge, trying to commit suicide. He was the suicide demon, a demon that wanted to kill himself and taking the victim with him to the other world. So that is the story. Any questions?
There is a tremendous amount of information there, and that sounds like an incredibly intense and horrific experience. I'm trying to think of where to start with the questions. So what happened to your friend after all of this happened?
Well, he's doing fine. He's in house arrest in his house, waiting for the hearings that would decide whether these charges are dropped or not.
Mm.
My lawyers and his lawyers are working together. I'm fully cooperating with him to get out of this problem. I don't want him to go through sentencing of years in jail. That would make me feel very bad.
Yeah, how long do you think he was, possessed by the so-called demon after this happened? Like, how long was he out of control?
He was out of control since that moment that I described till maybe 24 hours, because he was taken to the hospital and he was placed in this mental patient room.
Mm-hmm.
And he was sedated. And the story I heard that after 4 or 5 hours when the medicine past, they have to sedate him again because he continued under the influence. So what I heard, I haven't seen the medical records, is that he then after that, he came down and realized everything. And he wrote a letter apologizing to me from that jail and giving me thanks for saving his life that he wanted to take off. So yes, that's when I heard, that's when I saw that. He came back from the episode. It was like 24 hours.
So not really something where, like a lot of times with psychotic episodes, you hear about people being quite out of it for weeks or months on end. And it sounds like in this case, it was a very brief episode of uncontrolled behavior. Another thing that's kind of bizarre about this case is this man had used ayahuasca extensively before, and it seems like without any major incidences of harm or weird behavior. Were there any sort of signs you saw that something like this could happen with him, or what was his relationship to ayahuasca?
Most of these incidents are totally random and unexpected. This one I can explain looking back, in retrospect, that he, over the months, he was cornering the problem, identifying this thing. And in this 3-day retreat, with this coaching, especially the coaching before that critical session, he finally saw it. And that thing for me, the trigger, when he finally saw it, and during the psychedelic experience, he called his true self and was able to dissect his identity from this entity. In fact, this is the mantra I've been using for some time in my psychedelic practice. And it goes as follows: your path to enlightenment is becoming like a surgeon with the scalpel of self-observation, cut and divide your identity from your entity. So the part of you, these sub-personalities that you create and eventually take over your identity, they are so smart that make you believe that this is you. And as long as they say, for example, I like to drink alcohol, you're embracing the entity of alcoholic, and that entity will never be removed because it's your identity. So with self-observation, you have to understand how this alcoholic entity influenced you to drink the next beer. And when you see that working over and over, you start dissecting this entity from your identity. And that's when you start winning the war to removing the entity. And this is very toxic entities, but it applies to very benign entities sometimes. So this is my approach to spiritual healing of these entities, is self-observation. And psychedelics open the gates of this expanded state that you can self-observe and understand the whole picture from above. And this is what we try to do in our project in Jamaica.
Yeah, it's an interesting approach that maybe some people might not be all that familiar with. I'm just wondering, maybe you could speak to how you sort of developed this framework of, fixing demonic possession or parasites or entities or whatnot. Like, how did this, I guess, healing modality, I guess you would describe it,
Yeah,
come
that's the
about?
right term. That's the right term. It's a healing modality. It's a totally new healing modality. Even in the psychedelic community, they never heard about it. This is something that I learned from a Russian facilitator that instructed me all about this, because we met and we started exchanging notes, and I spoke to him all about that I know about ayahuasca. And then he shared with me all that he knew about mushrooms. It was a very interesting friendship, and I invited me to participate in his retreats he does with Russian participants. And I went to Jamaica and participated in one of his retreats. Then he transferred all the technology to us, me and two others, facilitators. And then we practice on our own and without him, our own modality, which is more clinical, more scientific, more Jungian shadow work type, while he was more oriented to religion and churches of mushrooms. So that was not my cup of tea, because I come from an ayahuasca church and I left an ayahuasca church. I was not interested in joining a mushroom church. But I was fascinated by the technology. And he said, well, you do it that you wanted, you're responsible for that. God bless you. So we began doing this, the origin of how it came. But I researched all over the internet and there's nothing. So we're very, so when after we benefit, me, another long-standing ayahuasca facilitator, and a Buddhist monk that we met in this process, because these techniques has to do with the Tibetan demonic extraction techniques that have been guarded in Tibetan monasteries for centuries. They're finally coming out, because this Tibetan monk, this Buddhist monk, was trained in the lineage of Kali, which is the demonic exorcist by excellence, this Indian goddess. So he was trained in these demonic extraction techniques. And when he met us, he was fascinated by the possibility of practicing all these techniques that he had learned and have it stored in a drawer, because in America, there's nothing to do with that. So he found a forum to practice what he learned. So we joined together forces and began this project in Jamaica. The project is called SHAPE, like being in good shape, but this is the acronym for the project, with S, spiritual healing, SH, by astral parasite extraction, Shape. And the website is www.shape-my.life. It's not .com anymore in our website. It's Shape My Life. And there we can, your viewers can go and explore what we do. And it's a very interesting website. And it's basically about extraction of astral parasites. That's what we do. And we achieve that with retreats in Jamaica, where it's totally legal, with four consecutive sessions of heroic doses of four different strains of mushrooms. A natural state, no additives, no anything. And these are heroic dose. You know, Terence McKenna defined heroic dose around 6-7 grams. But we do 10 grams and even more, depending. We calibrate on each participant. We only take 7 participants at a time. We have 3 facilitators and staff, and in incredible, comfortable conditions in an upscale, luxury place in Jamaica. Set and setting is so important in this kind of things that we want to excel in that sense. So it's organic food, chef, private room, private bathroom, luxury facilities, and a very nice room to conduct the sessions. So we take, you have to be, this is not for everyone. This is for people that know that there's something more, especially people that already have some experience in psychedelics and haven't been able, and they still feel that there's something down there that they haven't reached. And when we explain this model to potential participants, they don't let me finish the presentation. They, at the soul level, they know, I want that. Yes, that is for me. I get it. If there's any viewers that feel like that, this is for you. If we have to convince you or to explain to you too much, although we are prepared to explain you as much as you want, this is probably not for you. This is something, is a call from your heart, a call from your soul. And this is participants that we interview you on a Zoom call, all three of us, and we have to decide whether this is good for you, if you're going to benefit from this. It's not about having the funds to pay for the retreat. It's about having the conditions that would make you benefit for this. I mean, it's only 7 people, and we have to be selective about who we're going to accept in the program. And this, so far, this results are amazing. Starting with me, I mean, I have removed 2 incredible parasites. I mean, we cannot invite you to a place where we haven't been. We have, all of us, 3 of us of the team, have experienced incredible removal of parasites. I have removed 2 of them, big ones that I didn't know I have. One from, I was carrying from the womb of my mother before I was born. And another one that I got it when, or it started developing when I was 4 years old. It's a trauma event when I was a child. I didn't know that was there. I didn't know how much it has been, has affected me in my attitudes and perception of the world, other people, women, my attitudes to relationships. We're all shaped by these parasites at the very, very stage of my life. So it's fascinating. So having experienced this freedom, it's something that we decided we cannot keep to ourselves. It's something that we decided we need to share with the world. Hopefully, I get accepted in the forthcoming Psychedelic Science Conference in Denver in June 2025. I applied to as a speaker. I think I have little chances, but I don't lose my hope. There's a lot of people that wants to speak in that conference. But anyways, we're conducting podcasts like this one, and I wrote a book about, it's called Psychological Demons on Psychedelics, The Ultimate Guide to Understanding and Removing Them. And it's a free ebook you can download from the website I just mentioned, and you can buy the hard copy on Amazon if you want. But it's free. You can read it for free. It's very interesting. We explain everything about what demons are and what we do with these Tibetan techniques, and it goes more in detail about that. So this is what we do. Thank you for the opportunity of letting the world know that what we do.
Yeah, it's very intriguing, this framework that you've developed. It seems to have come from a bunch of different sort of influences, with the Russian guy apparently having developed this technology, if you will, and then there's that Tibetan element as well. I know that you trained extensively in Peru. Did they have any sort of frameworks that were similar to this in any way?
Yes. Shamanism is something that acknowledges and recognizes the existence of demons. All religions have accepted the notion of demons. Islam, Christianity, Hinduism, everywhere. Angels and demons is universally accepted by all religions. And the Bible is full of references. Jesus expelled them. So it's something that science in the last 100 years that science has denied completely this existence. The power of the demons is increased when you deny that they exist because they are free to do whatever they want. These are bundles of negative energy that dwell in your subconscious. There is not these Hollywood images of corns and these slimy beings that kill and they come from outside to invade you, that you touch this object and you acquire this demon through touch, or you're too close to this dark peep, that guy, this satanic guy, and then you get this demon from him because you shake the hands with the guy. But this is not how it works. However, in shamanism, they believe that these are external things that invade you. And a good shaman is able to extract them. And we don't deny that that could be possible. However, we focus because those cases, if they exist, that they probably exist, is very small percentages of the cases of demons. The majority, like over 90% of these entities are created by ourselves through trauma, from inheritance, or from a toxic behavior that we cultivate. I mean, you start drinking alcohol when you're 13, and by 20, you have created this pattern of energy that we call subpersonality. We all have subpersonalities. You have the husband subpersonality, the wife's personality, the student that you are, the daughter of your mother, the girlfriend of your boyfriend. We assume all these different roles that sometimes compete each other for dominance in our psyche. So eventually, if there's a toxic pattern of subpersonality, it eventually acquires self-awareness and start hanging around by itself in your subconscious. You don't no longer have control over it. It realizes that it exists in itself. We are creators. We create music, we create art, and we create life. We have children. So we are at the image of God. We are creators. So we create other selves inside ourselves with repetition, with intention, and we create these entities. So most of these entities that we remove are self-created entities. The ones that shamanism propose are just a minimum amount of them. So the work that we do to help you is mostly removing these shadows that Jung described, and they come from the id that Carl Sigmund Freud described. The id, the ego, and the superego is these primordial primal energies down there that tend to work on themselves, and these instincts that take shape depending on how we feed them. And they take over. They mess with your life. If you feel that there's something there that you haven't been able to reach, that is influencing you, and you're not happy, and there's something wrong, and you don't know what it is, it's an entity. So it's time to go deep. Psychedelics are the best. I think the psychedelics is a blessing for the new level of civilization. This psychedelic renaissance is a great promise for the future of civilization because these chemicals open the gates of the subconscious for the first time, or not for the first time, this has been doing for ancient times. You have all this, the Temple of Apollo in Greece, and you have all this, the Soma of the Indians, the Hindus. It's been there forever. However, it's being guarded by priests and elites that control society. But now, when this renaissance is coming out to the general public, and I think it's a great thing that is happening. That's a long answer to your question.
Yes. So for you, this demon extraction or astral parasite extraction, it's more of a psychological framework. It's not literally that you're pulling out demons from people per se. I'm interested going back to your friend who had been using ayahuasca for some time, like what did he initially start using ayahuasca for, if you know? And how did the demons sort of fit into it? Did you suggest that he might have a demon? Was that how that aspect of it came about?
Well, he in our conversations, he speculated that there was something that was inside of him that was not him. That's, he initiated that conversation. I mean, I cannot suggest to anyone that you have demon. Only you feel that there's something wrong somewhere. And this is what he felt. And would start sharing that with me. And he mentioned, it's like something. So I mentioned parasite. Yes, parasite. And that's why I give him the book about the biological parasites. I get more involved into it. And understanding that this is something that is not him. It's not me. It's something that is not me that is with me. And that's a parasite. It feeds from your life force. And this parasite always wants to promote the behavior that feeds the parasite. Because without that behavior, they die. They need to continue inducing you to that behavior to continue living. That's what they call parasites. You are the host and they're living from you. So it sabotages our life. It stops our development. It limits our potential. I mean, it brings problems. You know, all these unexplainable bad things that happens, like in a row, I crashed my car, and then I got divorced, and then my mother died, and blah, 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 everything in a couple of years. You're overwhelmed. There's something there that you have to check out. I mean, they want you to suffer, because there's the suffering that entities love to feed from. So this is a little bit, you know, simple, but at the same time, a lot of complexity. But with experience and so many cases, I've been able to understand this better. I'm able to guide others to understand. And when you listen to this kind of explanation, there's something in your soul, that your heart, that tells you, yeah, makes sense. So, because it makes sense. And this is a realm that is totally unknown and is beginning to be uncovered. So it's demons are something that you don't have to be afraid of. You have to be afraid of the consequences of having them, because this is the price you pay. So don't be afraid of confronting, finding. I don't want to hear about demons. I don't want to get there. Well, that's a perfect way to continue the way you are. You're never going to change. So you have to have the courage to look inside and find them out. When you put a name to these things, it's much easier. Because when you speak about trauma, so these are so ambiguous words that doesn't have a shape, doesn't have a form. But when you put a name to the condition, this trauma, no, this is the demon of lust. This is the demon of greed. Oh, okay. So it has to, you visualize that better rather than the trauma of scarcity that you had when a child and now you're greedy. And, all right, but that's hard to put in a concrete box to remove that. How do you do that? This is so ambiguous. When you put a name, no, this is the demon of greed that is destroying your life. Okay, now it's much more easier to attack the problem. So just the label itself, it is start to help, even if you haven't removed it. Another thing is that in these techniques of removal, what happens is that these things at the astral level, at the quantum level in your subconscious, they have a physical correspondence, okay? So you can feel them. Some people feel, without psychedelics, that they have something here or something there in my back. The doctors cannot find what it is. They have all sorts of tests. Still there, something there. So in one of the techniques in extraction, during that state of, you know, 10 grams of mushrooms, your ego goes like a little bit removed from the equation, but you're still conscious and you feel the part of your body where that is. And this comes with the furba. The furba is the ceremonial dagger. It doesn't cut, it's not sharp. It's just to pin down the energy in the specific spot, because it starts moving around. And then when you pin it down, then comes these extraction techniques. I'm physically extracted and you feel like, yes, something went off. It's not that facilitator told you, I got removed, and you feel like the same. And just by your faith or trust, you assume that and you believe what you're told, that it was removed. That's not the case. It is something that you feel like this relief in that instant. And from that moment, you start feeling different. And you start reconfiguring your psyche. And the dreams that you have that night are resettling everything. And by the 2 or 3 days later, you are a new person because you got rid of that energy. And you're feeling it consciously with light and understanding and this attitude of growth and alignment with the universal love. And then your life changed forever. So it's permanent change. There's always like in other techniques that you achieve similar results. But what happens is that over the months, you feel like coming back to the old patterns. And that's why you haven't actually removed going to the source, to the bottom of it. You disable it temporarily. With these techniques, this is like permanent. So this is very powerful. This is like the NBA of spiritual healing. This is big leagues for people that really want to go to the bottom of it and have the courage to go for it. And we're here to help them. And we enjoy it so much because we project, we see ourselves in them because we went through the path and we know how it goes. That's why we can tell you and show you how to go about it because we have walked the path already. And I continue to walk it. I mean, it's endless. I can wait for the next opportunity. I can do 3 or 4 more days of that with heroic doses. We, as the staff, we are always looking forward for opportunities to immerse ourselves in the process again. Because every time we do it, it's incredible, the benefits that we get. So this is what we do. We don't invite anyone. We wait for the door to be knocked. If you are interested, knock the door and it will be open. We don't want to convince anyone to do this. It's from your soul. It's your mission. It's your call. Visit the website, send an email, Zoom calls, face-to-face interview, and then we begin a process to change your life, shape my life.
It's definitely an intriguing technique. How intense would you say that taking that 10 plus grams for people for consecutive days is in general? Like, I can't even fathom.
It's not as intense as it sounds because, you know, the clinical dose for depression, which is like 25 milligrams of psilocybin, is an experience that it's like 2, 3, 4 hours maybe with somebody that watches over you and plays some music and all that. And that's very nice experience, something intense for some people. But you take 10 grams under the supervision of the program, and it's like 4 hours, same 4 hours that you take 4 or 5 grams, but much, much deeper. And it doesn't have a drag on you physically after you finish. That night, in each of those 4 days, people are at the buffet, eating, sharing experiences, talking. I mean, and looking forward for the next day because they're recognizing the value that this is. After the first night, the other three are like, the mystery is gone. So this uncertainty wasn't going to be, oh my God, 10 grams. It's not that bad. And we're taken care of professionally with the right set and setting, professionally selected music, perfect conditions. It's only one night of a little bit of uncertainty. After the first night, you're looking forward. This is great. I didn't know it was like that. And it's not that hard. And it could be hard. I mean, momentarily, the episodes that you suffer, you cry, you have some catharsis there because it's part of the release of your healing. Yeah, but we don't call that suffering. This is healing. So it's like removing a thorn from your finger. I mean, you have to, ouch, feel so much better after. It's a great investment. If you call that suffering, well, that's bring me some. I mean, if it brings me healing after that. So yeah, it's not, to answer your question, it's not, it's intense, yes, because you're gone. Your ego, your observer is gone. You're immersed in the psychedelic experience completely. And since you have this intention, it's not trippy. It could be a stage of colors and things like that, like psychedelic, the typical psychedelic trip. But since you have been working before the retreat, we train you. When you go there, you know what you're going to. You know what you're going to be doing. And before the session, we prepare you again. And when you get immersed into this dose, it's not about tripping. It's not a trip, like an entertainment type of trip. It's surgery. You go straight to the things that you need to work. And we encourage you to have a notebook. Sometimes you receive specific instructions from the spirits of the mushrooms or your higher self or whatever it is there, this infinite wisdom that you start writing down specific instructions to follow once you come back home. And we encourage you to follow them, because it's a window in time that opens if you wait too long after you come back home. That window may be closed already. It's a time-space thing that is important to be timely when you go back home and do whatever you was told to do by your own soul, not us. You find yourself. I have received incredible specific guidance. So in one of those occasions, I was instructed to come back and apologize to a person that I have been not the best person to him. And as soon as I get back from the airport in Florida, I just called him and cried in front of him, apologizing. And that was the most synchronistic thing, because the way he reacted changed everything for both of us. And that was needed. So I got these instructions, specific instructions to do that. Come back and you call this guy and you apologize and you from your heart. So he knows that you're apologizing from your heart. It's not from your mouth out. And I was so emotional and I cried so much apologizing that I touched his heart. He really forgave me. And it was the beginning of a beautiful outcome that later turned out in great outcomes for us financially. So it's fantastic. It's just in so many ways that this can manifest as a benefit for you, physical, emotional, spiritual, abundance. And when you remove these obstacles, the universal flow starts going through you most easily. And when you allow it, you're more in tune and aligned with the universal force, universal life, and the divine in yourself. And it's just amazing. So this is what we love it.
Yeah, I'm thinking about your protocol compared to what happens with clinical trials, where a lot of times it's like one, maybe two sessions, and those sessions are often spread out by a few weeks. And, you know, the dose being often about 25 milligrams with 10 grams of dried mushrooms, you're talking more about between 100 milligrams to 200 milligrams of psilocybin, right?
True, yeah.
And
4 consecutive days of that.
Yeah. Yeah, why do you feel that is necessary when people, you know, in these clinical trials, they're already reporting oftentimes relief of depression, addiction, and like those, I guess, could be psychological demons, if you will. Why is this very intensive protocol something that this group is pursuing? Because it seems like it might increase risk. I don't know.
It's not our experience. The little dose of psilocybin is very, very high. I mean, your stomach is not big enough to eat the amount of mushrooms that you need to die from mushrooms. It's so big, the little dose, that is very safe. You'll never die. There's no overdose of mushrooms. So that's very safe. That's very, we feel comfortable with that. Otherwise, we would not be doing this. Okay, so we do this for 4 consecutive heroic dose sessions, because these energies are very hard to remove, and you have to hit them with the bat hard. And sometimes there's one case back in January, a month ago, 25, that it was on the third session that this entity came out after 2 intense sessions. It's still there, the third one. Boom, that was this incredible episode. Screaming, you know, out of control person. We have all the equipment to restrain you if you get out of control. You're very well taken off. We know what we're doing. And then after that, when he came down from that, I mean, there was a lady that changed so much in her facial features. So she came like that, and she left like that. And the iPhone did not open with face recognition. She needed to dial the password because the phone could not recognize her. That much was her change. And we take pictures before and after, so you can take home 4 days later. And it's impressive, the amount of physical change that you experience. You watch yourself in the mirror and you feel different. So this is the case.
So during that guy's third session, he was having some kind of behavior that was difficult. Is that typical of what you would see with a demon or parasite extraction for some cases?
I don't understand the question. What was
that? So you said he was like screaming and he had to be restrained. How often does that sort of thing happen, and what does that mean?
It's not often. It's not often. These are the most dramatic cases. Mm-hmm. But we are prepared to handle them.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And it happens in ayahuasca, like the case I just described. It happened in Bufo alvarius, you know, 5-OD-DMT kind of experience, mm-hmm. the toad. So all psychedelics, not only mushrooms, have the capacity of having these entities manifesting. It happened more often in Bufo alvarius, which is very intense, than ayahuasca, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But it happens in mushrooms, it happens in ayahuasca, but it happened to me, and it happens in Bufo. What else? I don't know. Probably in iboga, probably in other psychedelics too, but I'm not aware of that yet. Yeah, so it's psychedelics is when you disable the default mode network, this director of the orchestra that is observing everything and is putting together all your sensory input into the identity that you think you are. And when you disable that, with enough psychedelic that you no longer are able to observe yourself. You just be. You are your true self. All these things that are hidden in the closet comes out. And that's why you can able to observe them and you're able to find things that you didn't know you have. And this is the value of the psychedelics. It's very hard to get there only by meditation, only by breath work. A combination of those, you know, may take you far, and with intense, long-standing practice of any of those can take you far. But nothing more faster and effective than heroic doses of psychedelics. Mm-hmm. On the right set and setting, with professional care, is what we do is like a rebooting of your life in a weekend. This is what we do. Something that would take months and years of intense work, you can do this in a weekend. I mean, just totally, it's about reprogramming yourself the next month or two after you return from Jamaica. We advise you how to do that because you are a new person. It's heavy. So, but it's fantastic. People are invariably happy with the results. 100% of the persons know the success rate is 100%.
And you've experienced like an episode sort of where like you were having like a physically, I guess, cathartic moment at some point with psychedelics, right? You said?
Me?
Yeah.
No. I'm looking forward.
Okay.
I'm looking forward. If that happens, is that what I need to experience? Be my guest. If there's an entity there that needs to manifest that way in me, go for it. I'm ready.
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, I'm looking forward to try one very strong strain that we found that we're going to try ourselves to test it. I'm looking forward to take a good dose of that to see what happens. So I'm not afraid of having anything that happening to me. It comes.
Yeah.
And welcome.
Actually, I don't know, intriguing that, you know, 5-MeO-DMT seems to cause at a higher rate, very physical reactions for people, whereas other drugs don't seem to cause that as much or as frequently. And I don't think it's necessarily the default mode network that's doing all of that. That can happen, you know, changes in connectivity with a lot of different drugs that don't necessarily cause that like physical reaction, like salvia. Even ketamine can do some somewhat similar things, but yeah, it's definitely, you know, all your experience is a framework people might not know much about, but maybe it works for some people, but nonetheless, like, regardless of it working, it's definitely something interesting to think about. So thank you for explaining everything. Is there anything else you feel is worth mentioning?
Well, we welcome your audience to visit our website and check the book. It's a free book, www.shape-my.life. Remember, thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
Thank you for the opportunity. Bye.